Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are with Friday on the Front Porch for the 12th day of February, 2016. Yes, the program is on yet, and we should be rolling merrily along. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room and say howdy to Andrew Z and Jug of Punch. Welcome to the room, Andrew Z. And Jug of Punch and King of Cups and Labor Man, all capably moderated by longtime and veteran, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky. Hey, Andrew's another member of the Up Over Down Under family. Welcome aboard, mate. It is, as I said, Friday on the Front Porch. We close this second full week of February. And we do so, you know, this is a listener-supported operation. And that means we have to fundraise constantly, always, to keep everything going here. And the week has not been terrible. We've had a lot of help along the way, and we find ourselves needing to raise $340 this evening. We have had far worse Fridays to deal with than that. The feed sounds like you're in a can. Do you have Prince Albert in a can? No, but we have Bob in one. Now, that's just strange. That's just bizarre. And I wish I knew the answer. Well, what we've got here is just equipment that's failing. I think we're losing a preamp on a mic channel. And again, hopefully this week, and we've got the production machine is dying. I've sent out I turned on the Lottie signal. And hopefully over the weekend I'll get to consult with him a little bit and find out if this is salvageable. Never, never, never a dull moment. Mm-hmm. Let me see. You sound like you're in a can. Any better? No. No, we need a little bit of high end, I think. I don't know. Hopefully it will improve. Thank you, Asa, Brother Deacon Asa out in Vancouver. Feed sounds fine, Bob. Maybe this is a taste thing. Thomas noting, hearing Bob live on FYINation.com, loud and clear. And no debates to preempt me tonight. Yay, hooray. Gotta love that. Absolutely. So, good. Thank you. All is well. And you know what? We don't have Prince Albert in a can. We don't have anybody in the can. And frankly, when you get right down to it, no, my refrigerator is not running. But that's just every day. So we try to raise $200 every evening. We pulled up a little bit short last night. That means that we got $340 to go. And thank you overnight to brand new subscriber Mark. And other contributor, Mark, that's why we've got 340 instead of 360. Thank you very, very kindly. And that's how we do this. So 340, that's 10 at 34, 34 at 10. Oy, 2 at 17. No, 17, no, 34, what? 10 at 34. Oh, it's been a long week. But anyway, hopefully, you know, 1 at 340, 2 at 170. Yeah, there we go. There we go. 4 at 85. 8 at 4250. 16 at 21 and a quarter. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's 21 and a quarter, Jug of Punch, but Jug of Punch is the numbers guy, so we'll take him as red. No, okay, that makes a little sense. Okay, that's a little clearer. It was apparently a tune-in issue that was making me sound like I was down there in a can with Prince Albert. I don't want to be anywhere with Prince Albert. He was a creepy dude. Oh, God. It's freezing cold and going to get colder, at least here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan. Not looking forward to this. Let's see. Tonight's overnight low, 7. Tomorrow's overnight low, 3. Then it gets somewhat more bearable through the week, and maybe that no-account rodent was right, and we get an early spring. Who knows? But the 3 and the 7, and yeah, we could that Mike and Carol Brady could see their breath this morning. It was really exciting. So here in about, 54 minutes or so, we'll fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and bring you on, anyone on who wants to come and play. If you've never participated in the Horn Molloy Skype chat group, then all you need to do is get on Skype, which is really stunningly easy to do, and set up your account and send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk. And he'll show you the little breadcrumb trail, and you can follow it right over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, where we have a rollicking good time most every Friday. And I have no doubt that this Friday will be like many others. We've got a note to begin the program coming from Jennifer in Australia. Jennifer says, "Wow, I just watched Erica Garner's TV ad endorsing Bernie. How vividly one can see in her the likeness of her father, and even more so in the sweet face of his granddaughter. I viscerally felt Mr. Garner's strength and power holding onto life through the family out of which he was so brutally torn by the NYPD. Damn the stinking, filthy, dead heart of our nation that allows such foul outrage to go unchallenged time and time again. Fuck incrementalism. Why are we being told we have to wait another violent hour to reawaken the tenderness needed to claim that we are a civilized people?" Weeping. "I was rocketed back to the AIDS Armageddon when I was being raised in a gay community. All of a sudden, people started dying. We lost so many people in such a brief amount of time. I hope I'm not being insensitive when I say it was like we could not breathe. The deaths came so fast and furious. The indifference from the larger community was cruelly stupid in that way when one says the word, a bit of spittle lands on one's own cheek. Stupid. Those years are what made me the crusader for marriage equality I am today. Our recent progress does put some of my ghosts to rest, reluctantly, for the ghost of true friends are enduring. But my... how I remember the angering frustration of people barred from the bedsides of their lovers, not even allowed to hold hands. The next step will be when these marriages are just that, marriages, not activism. I don't know why that advertisement triggered such memories. The two things aren't connected, though the anguish may be similar. Perhaps the pain I describe is the closest a pink-gray person can get to fathoming the pain caused by the injustice endured daily by brown-black people, i.e. people losing people suddenly and there being nothing fair, nothing nonviolent, nothing decent to depend on as one grasps and finds only fists full of confusion. Jennifer concludes saying, I might have had an opportunity to face being labeled a burdensome minority if it would have ever occurred to any of the people who raised me up to treat me a little straight girl, like anything other than family. Anyway, I'm babbling now, as well as bawling my eyes out. Suffice it to say that Eric Garner's daughter is a fucking amazing person. Hear, hear. Hear, hear. And thank you for that. Thank you for that, Jennifer. If you don't know what Jennifer is referring to, there's a new Bernie ad out. And, well, let's go with the audio, shall we?
They really don't like Hillary, though. What do you think that's about?
Yeah, women are more for her than men are, and she has...
But not younger women.
The black...
They're more for Bernie.
You're young, you're thinking, you know, where are the boys? The boys are with Bernie.
Let's welcome Gloria Steinem. Thank you.
Actually, I'm only here today to make Bernie Sanders an honorary woman.
So that is the Gloria Steinem piece that caused such a furor. Here, then, is Erica Garner, in her own way, daughter of Eric Garner, strangled to death by the New York Police Department, for nothing, you know, summarily executed. Judge, jury, and executioner right there on the mean streets of New York City. Here's Erica Garner speaking for herself and not letting anybody speak for her or tell her, you know, who she owes some sort of allegiance to.
This is everything that I have, my family. Family should be important to everyone. Mostly I like being a mother, Alyssa. She's 6 years old. That's my baby, my only child. She likes to read me books, sit down and talk with me about her school.
But there's a lot of sand in the car.
Recently, she just learned about Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King. She asked me, did Rosa Parks not give up her seat for a white man? And I said, yes. She said, but those in the old days, right, mommy? And I had to explain to her that it's not really over. This is what mommy is. I'm an activist. And the same thing Martin Luther King was, he fought for our rights. This is the same thing I'm doing in honor of her pop. My dad's name is Eric Garner. No one gets to see their parents' last moments, and I was able to see my dad die on national TV. They don't know what they took from us. He wasn't just someone that no one cared for him or no one loved him. He was loved dearly. Alyssa misses my dad. She tells me, are you okay, Mom? Do you miss Pop-Pop? She wished she was here, so her mom wouldn't be sad anymore. I'm just trying to get the truth out there to tell his side of the story. He was being the loving, caring man that he was, and he was murdered. For a whole year, I've protested, and every Tuesday and Thursday, I feel like a representative for people throughout this whole nation because I'm doing this. I'm speaking out, me being his daughter. And that's what I want to do. I just want to tell my truth. I'm never giving up. I'm never going to forget. And I don't want the world to forget what happened to my dad. Our people died for this. Martin Luther King died for this. Malcolm X died for this. And who were they? They was protesters. I'm behind anyone who's going to listen and speak up for us. And And I think we need to believe in a leader like Bernie Sanders.
It is not acceptable to me that we have seen young black men walk down streets in this country, be beaten, and be killed unjustly.
There's no other person that's speaking about this. People are dying. This is real. This is not TV. We need a president that's going to talk about it.
The African American community knows that on any given day, some innocent person like Sandra Bland can get into a car, and then 3 days later, she can end up dead in jail.
I believe Bernie Sanders is a protester.
When a police officer breaks the law, that officer must be held accountable.
He's not scared to go up against the criminal justice system. He's not scared.
I want to see an America where when young black men walk down the street, they will not be harassed by police officers. They will not be killed. They will not be shot.
And that's why I'm from Bernie.
See why Jennifer got chills? Yeah. I suspect there is a hunger in this country for reality. There's a hunger in this country for a word that has been severely diminished, and that word is gravitas. Gravity. Substance. Purpose. And gravitas is not defined by how willing one is to go and bomb a new set of brown people. Gravitas is not defined by one's willingness to try to start World War III by enforcing a no-fly zone in Syria where the Russians are already flying. Gravitas is not saying never ever to one of the fondest, most sincere hopes of millions of people in this country, single-payer health care. Gravitas is born of a sincerity that is unalloyed with ruthless ambition or a sense of entitlement. This is little more than a trip up the ladder of the slicky slide and something that happens turn by turn by turn. We hunger in this country. Many of us, millions of us. We hunger in this country for someone who wants to do the real business of making this country better. Not sometime, not later on, but get started yesterday. And I think that's how you get testimonials like Erica Garner's. Now, because we're fond of doing this sort of thing, how's about we do a little compare and contrast, shall we? Because I just happen to have another campaign ad. Now, this is not one of Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton's ads. No, this is an ad for Ayatollah Ted. Compare the sincerity and the reality of what you just heard with the absolute unmitigated crap. I mean, it doesn't even rise to the level of an actual four-letter, unmentionable, on censored terrestrial radio word. This is just crap. And it comes from the campaign, like I said, of Ayatollah Ted. Shall we?
Has anyone else here struggled with being lied to?
Well, I voted for a guy who was a Tea Party hero on the campaign trail, and then he went to D.C. and played patty cake with Chuck Schumer and cut a deal on amnesty.
Does that make you angry?
Angry? Makes me feel dumb for trusting him.
Maybe you should vote for more than just a pretty face next time.
You guys have room for one more? Come on in. Come on in.
Come on in. You can have Frank's chair.
I'm Ted Cruz, and I approve this message.
Yeah, see, isn't that cute? Isn't that adorable? At one and the same time, it mocks the idea of support groups that provide relief for millions of people, and which Ted Cruz will never do anything to make possible for millions of people. There are people in support groups, group therapy, now, who, if Ayatollah Ted gets his way, will be thrown out of that, will not have that support. But you know, this mocks it, so you know that, you know, group therapy, that doesn't work. It's just a bunch of silliness. What you need to do is get down on your knees and, you know, like Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a very long time, does, you know, turn up the reverb and pray to Almighty God. And this is an anti-Rubio ad. You know, I voted for a Tea Party hero who was just, well, he played footsie with Chuck Schumer. So by using the term playing footsie, there's a little homophobic smear tucked away in there. Man, they're just getting it all. But the best line is the line uttered by the pretty blonde lady who opines, maybe next time you'd better vote. Maybe next time you should vote for some more than just a pretty face. And she has a pretty face, at least in my estimation. Well, that ad's not going to air now. The Ayatollah Ted campaign is doing everything in their power to send that ad down the memory hole. What ad? Huh? What? We didn't have an ad. Who said we had an ad? You see, that's not from The Onion. And at the end, you know, come on in, you can have Frank's chair. The guy walking in has a Rubio for President T-shirt on. Because at this point, the end game over there is for Ayatollah Ted to knock Rubio out of the contest so that it becomes closer and closer to a one-on-one matchup between him and T-Rump. Now, we all know that Jebbia is just sort of hanging. Oh, by the way, Jim Gilmore got out of the Republican race today. That would matter if we could understand why he ever got in it. But this ad is not going to air. Because after they spent a gazillion campaign dollars from some billionaire PAC whack job fundamentalist evangelical amosexual, and they went out and hired a production company to produce the script, and the script is called Conservatives Anonymous. Well, they had everything ready to go. I mean, they produced the ad. You heard the audio there. I watched the video. You know, someday we'll be some sort of highfalutin television show, and we'll all get to watch together now, won't we? And they were all ready to roll it out, and they were so proud of it because, you know, Ayatollah Ted likes to think he's cute, you know, reading adulterated Dr. Seuss on the floor of the Senate, you know, pimping his children out in ads. You know, the guy has the morals of a weasel that lives in a pile of shit. And everything was ready to go with this ad until somebody looked and said, hey, that pretty blonde lady what says maybe you should vote for something besides a pretty face, I've done seed her somewhere before. Yeah, I remember one time when we was out on crusade trying to lead people to the love and grace of Christ Jesus, and it had been a long day on the Christian trail, and I was in the motel room, and I turned on the TV, and I thought I'd relax by watching a little porn and masturbating in the name of Jesus, of course. And I think she was in one of them porn movies I done seen in the name of Jesus. Yes, it's true. Her name's Amy Lindsay. She has starred in a number of softcore porn films. And I'll be honest, I'm so far removed from the world of video porn, any other porn for that matter, I'm so far removed from it that I don't know the difference between soft and hardcore. I mean, I know, is it the camera angles? Or the number of people in the cast? Or the quality of the set? Or maybe the degree to which the dialogue is scintillating or not. I don't know. But anyway, she starred in several softcore porn films. And apparently she delivers a line quite well. I mean, you heard that. That was very convincing now, wasn't it? Ayatollah Ted spokescreep, Rick Tyler, when interviewed by BuzzFeed, said, unfortunately, she was not vetted by the production company. Had the campaign known of her full filmography, we obviously would not have... Let her appear in the ad. I think I hear Ted calling. I gotta go, okay? Bye. Click. Now, BuzzFeed in turn reached out to Amy Lindsay, and she said, well, I'm a conservative Christian and a Republican just like Ted. I've never done any hardcore pornography. And I've been in films where I got to keep my clothes on too. And then she said that she thought everybody knew, you know, and said, well, no. I guess apparently they didn't know my whole filmography. Well, I mean, you're a Christian, ma'am. Did you not turn in a headshot and something in the way of a resume or a curriculum vitae? And she's kind of bummed out because she wanted to be in the commercial. Now, for her own part, she hasn't decided whether she's going to vote for Ayatollah Ted or T-Rump. But she's trying to put the best face on this that she possibly can. In a cool way, then, hey, then it's not just like some old white Christian bigot that people want to say. It could be maybe a cool kind of open-minded woman like me, you know, who would vote for Ayatollah Ted. Whew. But seriously, compare and contrast. I guess I don't know. Is this because of what an incurable smartass Ayatollah Ted is, or is somebody within his campaign staff a smartass? Because smartass seems to be the running theme through his campaign. He just telegraphs the fact that he thinks that he's smarter than everybody else. And in point of fact, he's what a dumb person thinks. He's what a stupid teabagger thinks a smart teabagger sounds like. Mm-hmm. Now, all those clips and quotes inside the Erica Garner ad, well, they have... The reason that works is because there is an independent reality to the horrors to which mainly young black men are subjected. And the question becomes one of, do we address this problem incrementally too, or do we put our foot down and say, no, stop it now? For instance, and yes, I understand that Congress controls the budget and everything, but a president could conceivably create a Department of Police Brutality Oversight entirely separate from the Civil Rights Division, whose only job is to review dodgy-looking grand jury results. Or maybe task more lawyers in the Civil Rights Division to incidents of police brutality. Now, that is not incremental. That would be something where you're really trying to get something done immediately. And I'm sure you've probably seen the story of Marshawn McCarroll. It's horrible. Young man was an activist with Black Lives Matter. He had spent his young life, among other things, working to help feed homeless people. He had tried to be a source of support for troubled young people in his community. And after the gunning down of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, he organized protests in his native Ohio. Well, in Marshawn McCarroll's life is a warning about activism. Because the real variety takes a horrible toll. Almost always, the people against whom legitimate, genuine activists align are paid for what they do. More often than not, well paid. Whatever it is they do, they go home at the end of the day, they put it aside, and they live this sort of double life. The kind of thing I imagine moved Kurt Vonnegut to write that line that it appears as my subject line in my email. If you ever get an email from me, it'll probably be in there. It says, a normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all. And the people against whom activists often align aren't much interested in hearing their conscience. And so they put it away at the end of the day, and they get up the next morning, and they go to work, and they do their thing, and they come home, and they put it away, and they get up in the morning, and they go to work, and they come home, and they put it away. But if you're an activist, you're not in it for the money. It's like being a musician or a painter. In a way, it is an art form unto itself. You don't do it because you think that's what's going to pay the bills. You do it because you are so morally and ethically compelled to do it, that to do anything else is inconceivable. And it will grind you down to a nub. If you're an activist and you work within other groups, you will find that sooner or later you're going to be in some sort of a little seminar, breakout meeting, whatever, about what is referred to as self-care. And that's the principle that you cannot let your righteous determination eat you alive. That you cannot let it consume you to the point that you become ineffective both as a self-actualized human being and within the realm of people you seek to help. And, you know, there's a lot of ways of going about self-care. But the thing is, activists have to be taught that. Because otherwise they will drive and they will drive and they will drive and they will drive. And they'll John Henry themselves. And die with a hammer in their hand. Well, that's what happened to Marshawn McCarroll. A few nights ago, he posted to his Facebook page that his demons had won and he killed himself. And his friends and his colleagues and those whose lives he had changed, made better, were struck by grief. But not everybody. Oh no, dear God, not everybody. There's a police officer in Ohio by the name of Lee Cyr, C-Y-R. And upon the death of Marshawn McCarroll, Lee Cyr took to his own Facebook page, where there's a photograph of him in his police clothes with his completely skin-headed, shaved, bald look and some dark glasses. Photograph of that, and there's another one with a black box and a blue band across it that says, "I support Beaver Creek Police." But on the story announcing the death of Marshawn McCarroll, Fairborn, Ohio police officer Lee Cyr typed simply, "Love a happy ending." Oh, really? He did. Love a happy ending. To which one of his Facebook friends replied, "What a hypocrite!" And another of his Facebook friends replied, "One less to worry about." Now, of course, speaking to the Dayton Daily News, Fairborn Police Chief Terry Barlow said, "When we were made aware of a Facebook post that we linked to a Fairborn police officer, an internal affairs complaint was initiated. Posts that may discredit the police department are against policy. We take this seriously. We will ensure the professional standards of the department are upheld." The Dayton Daily News found out that Lee Cyr, who reveled in joy at the suicide of another human being who had never done a goddamn thing to harm Officer Lee Sear. Lee Sear, like I said, you get done at the end of the day, you put it down, you go home. You get up the next morning, you put it on, you go to work, you get done at the end of the day, you take it off, you go home. Lee Sear makes $75,611 a year as a Fairborn, Ohio police officer. And the last numbers available were for 2014. He has apparently been suspended, Lee Sear has. Suspended with pay, of course. Because, you see, in this hyper-militarized country, you can't ask somebody like Lee Sear to go without his paycheck after he viciously slimes all over a human being he didn't even know. Yeah, I meant signature line, not subject line. I said signature line as email. Thanks, Morty. Love a happy ending. Oh, but by God, if some police officer died and somebody put that on him, Blue Lives Matter. And, of course, Lee Sear probably also has a cop union that will make sure that he never feels really any ill effect from this vile bit of hate in which he gleefully engaged. Gotta wonder about his buddy who says, one less to worry about. But this is why many of us in this country hunger for seriousness. And we hunger for a seriousness that is almost single-mindedly focused on the civic well-being of our country. We would do well to get a lot better at minding our own business in the rest of the world. Maybe taking George Washington, whose birthday we're sort of jointly celebrating as President's Day this coming Monday, taking his advice to avoid foreign entanglements to heart. Or maybe Jesus' advice that we pluck the beam from our own eye before we go looking to yank the mote out of someone else's. And there was a lot of that sort of palaver in the Democratic pageant last night. Trying to figure out who we'd bomb, when, why. Because we just know somebody needs bombing out there. The hell's the point of having a military-industrial congressional complex if you can't find anybody to bomb? Right? And then there was that one, the question of the night for me. And I try to expect better of PBS. I really do. But I guess even PBS has to make sure that they're, getting something. I don't know. Do you even call them ratings? Because there it was. An official debate question. Is the United States ready? Wait, I think we need reverb for this. Is the United States ready for the next attack on the homeland? Well, objection, Your Honor, assumes facts not in evidence. Then again, I guess that just marks me out as a lily-livered peacenik that I would think that there's not going to be a next attack on the homeland. Or maybe I'm a lily-livered peacenik for absolutely still despising that word, homeland. Because there's only a few million people in this country for whom this continent really is the homeland. Right? Yeah. But there, I mean, and of course, Hillary was there to provide her bona fides about who, by God, she's willing to kill. And how many and how often and where. I really do wish the Democrats wouldn't play the ISIS Bruga 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 ISIS gonna eat your mama's Bible Bruga Bruga card, but I guess they couldn't resist. Is there no better way to ask that question? Is America ready for the next time the tourists bomb us? Are we ready for the next terrorist attack? Isn't that question more appropriately put? How can we make sure we don't get attacked again? Or is the cynical nature of that question that it's just taken as read that we're gonna? That no matter how sweet and good and decent and Christian and loving and upstanding and kind and that those barbarians are just going to do it anyway. Because see, that question in and of itself denies the existence of blowback. It denies the idea that maybe there's anybody anywhere on the face of this planet who might have who might have what they perceive to be an awfully goddamn good reason to hate our guts. And for my part, somewhere between 600,000 and a million surviving family members of innocent Iraqis who were shuffled off this mortal coil against their will. Yes, Iraqi men, but oh Lord, yes, Iraqi women and Iraqi children and some Iraqi fetuses inside the tummies of Iraqi mothers-to-be. Their extended families are going to be a long time forgetting who killed their loved ones. And I understand that. I still despise the goddamned relentless, remorseless, avaricious coal companies that caused entries to be made in my family history, you know, Virgil Kincaid killed in the mines. And that's just business, sunshine. This was war. War that we waged on people who had no way of shooting back. And we dare presume that they have no grievance with us? That the world owes us a mulligan? A do-over for what we most certainly and intentionally did? You know, it's it's quite possible that some of those civilian deaths that we caused in Iraq, directly or indirectly, were accidental. Or, as the Pentagon is fond of saying, regrettable. But starting that goddamn war in the first place was nowhere near an act to which we were compelled. It was a choice that we made. And a thing that we desired. And in that question, for me at least, a harbinger of where some people think we are inexorably bound to wind up. But freighted within that statement, the next terrorist attack is, of course, the notion that everybody from Bangor, Maine to San Diego, California, from Seattle to Key West has to be constantly terrified that ISIS is going to get them. And those fears have outcomes. Abdul Jamil Kamawal, pay attention to the verb tense here, was 68 years old. He was an immigrant and a refugee from his native Afghanistan. He, too, was an activist. He had worked for 22 years as a survey technician for Washington County. In Oregon. He was referred to as a pillar among the local Muslim community. In the course of his life, he founded two nonprofits whose purpose was to make lives easier for his fellow Afghans. He periodically went back to Afghanistan, lending his talent and his time to help rebuild the village that he came from, a little place called Kama, K-A-M-A. Kama was the focus of the Kama Relief Corp that he founded, and then there was the Afghan Aid Association that tried to help newly arriving Afghans here in the United States. No one had anything good to anything to say except good. For Mr. Kamawal, the other day, police took a 911 call reporting a man being beaten in the head with a shovel. The man being beaten was Mr. Kamawal. The man beating Mr. Kamawal in the head with a shovel was Michael Troxell. He's presently being held without bail on a charge called suspicion of using homicidal violence. He didn't know Mr. Kamawal, but he was doing construction work on his property when he allegedly picked up a shovel and beat a good man to death. We hunger for justice in this country. We hunger for relief. We hunger for even just the slightest indication that perhaps things do not have to be as brutal as they are. And there is no time to wait. Never ever is not acceptable. Because if we continue like this, if we continue down this path, there won't be much left, if anything, worth saving. And we haven't even gotten to that dear, kind, revered, elder statesman, Henry Kissinger, whom Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton told us last night that she reveres for what he did in opening China. And of course, he never could have opened China had he not shown his willingness to slaughter indiscriminately in places like Cambodia and Laos. Yeah. So it's 2 minutes before the hour, and that pretty much wraps up the filibobster. It's time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, the Horn Molloy Skype chat group. If you want to participate and you've never done so before, just send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunc, and he'll get you set up and get you going. Note coming from Brother Deacon Asa. Are we ready for the next terrorist attack? I look at that question a little differently, Bob. Maybe what they're asking is, are we ready for the next time a city water supply is switched and poisons hundreds of thousands of people? That is an attack on the homeland, isn't it? Well, yes, it is. But, you know, when corporations do it, we don't call it terrorism. We call it an accident. Or, you know, just like we described those dead people in Iraq, regrettable. Yeah. And again, the gentle reminder that we have $340 to raise this evening. And here, after the first hour of filibobster, we find ourselves regrettably at zero. Hopefully, that will change. In the meantime, though, a break to give us a chance to get the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable set up. This is Friday on the Front Porch. Listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Yes, we can bomb most any land. Send their kids to Disneyland. Give them a Big Mac and a prayer. Then forget that they are there. It's all there inside of me. All that guilt for all to see. Yes, I am American. Normandy to Viet. Viet. Vietnam. World War II is history. And this advice sounds good to me. It's time to bring that bull to heel and our true hearts to reveal. Are we an empire all alone? Throwing the world a rubber bone.
Bob says to stay muted.
Or can we export dignity? Respecting those who disagree.
Seemed appropriate, Jason Ringenberg. American Question from 2004. Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn. And let's see. Buttons to push. There's always buttons to push. No, damn it. There we go. Okay. A couple of notes before we go over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Ron in Raleigh says, did I miss something? He says, I've been listening to the news today. Most shows have been playing excerpts from last night's debate. One excerpt set me back. When Dr. Secretary Senator Clinton addressed the amount of money she's received from Wall Street, she answered by saying that President Obama had gotten more money than anyone ever had from Wall Street, yet it hadn't stopped him from standing up to Wall Street and reining in the big banks. Pause. Ron asks, when the hell did that happen? Some fines that the bank can write off? No perp walks? That ain't my idea of standing up and reining in. She also said that Dodd-Frank was the most significant financial legislation since the Great Depression. Pardon me, but that's a steaming pile. Does she think we're stupid? I believe she does. I don't know, Ron. Maybe it's not so much that she thinks we're stupid. It's just that she knows that none of us can ever be anywhere near as brilliant as she is. Just ask any of her fawning supporters. They'll tell you how absolutely damn brilliant she is. And I have no doubt that she's intelligent. But Newton, Einstein, Marie Curie, brilliant? No, I don't think so. Heather says, I was writing an email during your airing of the Cruz ad. It made me nervous. All right, well, at least now I've got a working definition of what softcore versus hardcore means. Hardcore is, you know, Ron tells me, like a number six. We dealt with number six last night. Carol notes, you know, I watched the four-part Bernie Madoff series. I'm looking forward to the sequel when Billary's elected. And in an effort to get fundraising off and running and started, a note coming from Steve in New York with a $25 challenge offering to match the first $25 that comes in to help take down the, well, the little bit of a deficit in the regular, ordinary amount of fundraising we have to do on any given night. And if somebody matches Steve's $25, that'll get us below the $300 mark, so that'll be great. Okay, so let's run over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Oh, wait, got to turn the damn music off first, Bob. Can't imagine what it must be like to have a producer. Yeah. Now we can do that. Hey, Sparky.
Can you hear me?
Oh, I hear you, Dandy.
Okay. We didn't have any music playing there for a while. I was wondering what was going on.
I mean, but you were hearing me, right?
No, after you said mute, it was just dead air.
Oh, yeah, I did. Well, I muted me, too. So that you wouldn't be, you know, blown out by the music or whatever.
Oh, because we're used
but to because, the because music. Because we've got a Norwegian blue computer here, you know, pining for the fjords.
Mm-hmm.
I've had to sort of reroute everything, so I got music coming from an entirely different, well, music's now coming from the machine that you're on. So if y'all weren't muted, that meant you were, and there was a little talking during it, but it's okay, because it's not like anybody's going to object.
Well, I was happy to get my computer problems fixed with the man cave this week.
Well, yeah, it did not go without notice that you were in the man cave.
I mean, the one computer, the other, Windows 10, the older Lenovo I got, it wouldn't run a month or two ago. It just come on and start beeping. So all I did was reset them, all the memory cards in it.
Well, at one point I got a bizarre message. Now when you try to boot up the production computer, it just takes forever, and most stuff won't run. And I got a message that said, verify, you know, and this happens every time, verifying DMI pool data. And, of course, it's an AMD processor. AMD data change, update new data to DMI. That might as well have been in Linear A. So
and then I had to get to the Wi-Fi extender to mate to the new router. That was a chore. But I finally got it to do its thing. And now I even got higher speed out there with the new router.
Oh, cool.
Checked it yesterday. But the view's not as good today, being in the house. Yesterday, while I was listening to you, I was watching the horses graze in the pasture.
Because they're back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember you citing last week that is that was the prophecy that the Broncos would win the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Were the horses white horses by chance, Sparky?
No.
Oh, because there's a white horse prophecy, I know.
They're brown horses.
Okay. Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's happening, Billable Rick?
Hey, I'll tell you, I feel like Christmas has come early to me. You know why?
No, do tell.
This indictment of Cliven Bundy.
That was just the criminal complaint that I was reading, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. It's going to be superseded by an indictment that's charging all those counts against him and against at least four other co-conspirators. I think they said that some of the other co-conspirators are already under another, you know, district's jurisdiction, which is referring to the folks that are in prison in Oregon.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Do you reckon that they're already cooling their heels?
Yeah. I think that's going to be a basis to not release.
So one of those would probably have, we're speculating here, but one of those would probably be ammonium nitrate Bundy.
And probably Ryan. And then I forget who one of the other ringleaders was in this thing. There were two others. I don't know if Pete Santelli is high enough up in the idiotocracy or whatever you want to call it.
Well, what about John Krakenheimer?
Oh, there you go. That's the guy I was thinking of. Yeah, yeah, he's high up, yeah.
Because he's currently a guest of the system in Arizona, Stan.
Right. And now after seeing the criminal complaint against Cliven, you know, the government's been playing three-dimensional chess with these fools while they've been, like, playing checkers, you know? Because the government was just waiting for the right time to pop these idiots, and that the bird refuge thing, the good thing about them taking that over was that that got the Bundys, the Bundy boys, we'll call them, out of Nevada. So they're not like, you know, yeah, they still have their armed guards around them and so forth, but, you know, they're sort of out of their element. And then, you know, the authorities lulled them into a sense of false security that they could come and go as they wish. You know, it's like they're flying on frickin' Southwest Airlines, you know?
You're now free to move about the country.
Yeah, there you go. That's the tagline. Exactly. You're now free to move about the country. And obviously they weren't. And then two of those, you know, a bunch of them were arrested in the on the highway going to, John Day, Oregon, or whatever that's called, the other town. I'm going to, you know, try to get some more people to join their sedition. Their open sedition against the U.S. government.
Well, I prefer to think of it as U.S. sedition because see, and this is kind of important, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
One of the Republican Party's greatest successes has been in creating a gulf between the idea of we the people and the U.S. government.
Sure.
And
right.
So I prefer to think of their sedition as having been committed against we, the people of the United States, trying to form that more perfect union.
Right.
Because, you know, nothing will take the air out of a more perfect union sails like a big old bunch of sedition.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And so there's that first round of the arrests, and then you have these other bird brains that are, you know, I'm surprised that one cat who was still at the sanctuary didn't request help from MUFON to come and help him again, you know, report with aliens and so forth. You know,
well, no, I don't know if you were listening last night, but the fact that he was somehow able to make the FBI yell hallelujah simply astonished me.
Well, you know, what the hell? I don't blame the agents for doing that. Just like,
they had Reverend Graham there.
Oh, there you go. So he was with the FBI agents, huh?
Yeah. You could hear him say hallelujah over the bullhorn.
Oh, okay. So anyway.
So do we need to get a memo out to Black Lives Matter that henceforward they should stop saying hands up, don't shoot, and they should all start saying hallelujah now, because that certainly worked for the asshole white guy who really had committed crimes.
Yeah, maybe they should say.
Oh, wait, we've got a Bob coming in from Ms. Tracy.
Don't forget, I can't breathe. Don't forget that.
Well, no. Okay, so now everybody just yells hallelujah.
Praise be the Second Amendment.
And then after that, you go take them to Burger King and have dinner.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think the correct combination of words, though, has to be hallelujah, praise be the Second Amendment. Don't you all think that?
Oh, yes. Don't, because you guys are coming, you know, we're coming up there good.
Yeah, because you got to have your guns with your God.
They're freedom protectors.
Yeah, and then after that, I guess you say, you have to say hallelujah.
Praise
be the Second Amendment, and God hates fags. I think you'd cover the three there.
No, don't forget about the Negro problem.
Oh, there you go. That's right. Yeah, let me tell you something I know about the Negro. Oh, jeez.
Oh, maybe that's it. Instead of hallelujah, maybe people confronted with police should just quote Clive and Bundy.
There you go.
Or maybe they could adopt that quote from the asshole cop in Ohio and put their hands up and say, "I love a happy ending."
Oh, God. Yeah, geez.
Was he talking about massage bomb? No.
No, that was the.
I know.
You heard it right.
So anyway, to kind of finish this up a little bit. So anyway, you have this one minor, I call it, prosecution in Oregon. You have a lot of defendants, but the charge is fairly limited. And I'm like saying, okay, where the hell are the weapons charges? I want some of these weapons charges that carry either 5, 7, or 10 year mandatory minimums, depending on whether you just carry or use the firearm, or if you brandish it, that gets you 7, or if you fire it, that gets you 10. And so in this criminal complaint against Clive and Bundy, Cloven Hoof Bundy, you know, it names, it refers to four other co-conspirators, and he's charged with two separate weapons counts, one related to a weapons count in connection with assaulting federal officers, and another one with regard to extortion. So by my reckoning, that's 14 consecutive years plus whatever else is imposed against him.
Because in that complaint, the word brandished is specifically used, and I trust that has a particular legal meaning.
Yes, that's in that word is in the statute. That means to basically, that's sort of like, you know, that's like kind of pointing your gun at somebody, basically, or training, aiming at them. And so the word aim is also used in the complaint. So what this complaint is doing is they're gonna charge these other goofs. I shouldn't call them goofs. They're actually very dangerous people. They should be in a supermax. They will be with a long sentence, Bob. They should also charge them with...
So with a long sentence that includes gun crimes, that means that they won't be eligible for Club Fed, like, say, at Maxwell Air Force Base in Alabama?
No. If your sentence is above a certain amount, you don't get Club Fed. I don't know what the cutoff is. Maybe it's like if it's more than 3 years. I don't know exactly. Plus, they always rank prisoners depending on the risk of danger that they pose, and you know, because these folks are menaces to society.
Let me ask you a separate question then. Is that why the prosecution in the Freedom Industries disaster was asking for 18 to 24 months for Denny Farrell? Because as long as it was less than that, that it would be Club Fed?
No, I don't think so. I think the 18 to 24 might have been based on the federal sentencing guidelines, which are just recommendations as to a sentence based on the offense conduct in this case, or in that case, rather. And the court is free to either adopt those recommendations, go below them, they can go
above. Right, and in the case of Denny Farrell, the George W. Bush appointee federal judge said, "This man is obviously not a criminal," and gave him 30 days and 6 months suspended.
Can you say 30 days in the hole, Bob? Is that canned heat?
I don't think this counts.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. No, that'd be a county jail, I think. A hole, like the L.A. County Jail, that would be 30 days. Would be 30 days in that hole.
Yeah, Tracy, you were going to say something?
No, I was just talking. I have my young man that I drive. We're on our way to Riverside. So he actually likes listening. I usually listen to the show through my earpiece. And I told him on our way today we get to go listen to the show live. So everybody, this is Will. Say hi, Will.
Hi.
Hey, Will.
Hello.
Welcome to the Horn Family Commune Congregation.
He is a 11th grader, and he's studying. Actually, he was reading about some stuff, some AP history stuff, asking me about Dr. King and his assassination, reminding me about how King was stabbed. I had totally forgotten about that. How he was stabbed by a crazy person, and stuff like that. So it's kind of fun. He gets to hear, democracy in action. We're talking. We have our weekly caucus, as you would like per se, and it's kind of cool. So,
well, lovely. You've got to alert Will to Dr. Bill.
Yes, I do. I'm gonna actually. His mom got him an iPod. So once we get a chance to do the iPod Apple thing, back thing, I will put the podcast for Dr. There's a podcast, yes. So I will.
Yeah, there's a podcast feed.
Excellent. That is an excellent idea.
Well, wonderful. Well, let me run over and welcome a new participant in the room. Good evening, Andrew.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it's good to be here finally. I've listened to the show for actually quite a few years, and it's pretty cool to actually be here on Friday.
You're Saturday, right?
Yes, it's about 11:22 a.m. Saturday.
Yeah, so I'll do the same thing that Malloy always used to do with John Fox and say, "Can you give me tonight's lottery numbers over here, please?"
Yeah. We could call this Brunch with Bob, right, Bob, for the Aussies?
Absolutely.
It's too hot here. I wish it was cold like in America.
Are you in New South Wales?
I'm actually in Canberra, the capital.
Oh, okay.
Where the Parliament is, so. Yeah.
Are they permanently in session, or do you ever get a break from them?
They actually sit very, very, very few days in a year. It's pretty amazing. I think they only work out of 52 weeks. They probably work like 15 weeks or something.
Oh, ridiculous. Nice work if you can get it. They sound like Republicans.
Yeah, well, look, they're pretty terrible at the moment.
Now, oddly enough, and I'm a big nerd for this kind of thing. I was using Google Earth a week or so ago, just kind of wandering around Canberra.
Okay, yeah, it's actually, I like it because the whole city was completely artificially created after Federation. So it basically was a land of nothing, just empty space before they actually constructed the whole city. So that's why it actually looks pretty nice. All the roads work together and stuff like that. So.
Well, Jennifer, who is also in Australia, wants to know, do you ever retreat to Bradwood, New South Wales, just over the border? Bradwood?
I don't travel much. No, I've heard of Bradwood, but no, I haven't been there. A lot of people in Canberra, actually, they go to the coast, to a place called Batemans Bay. Quite a popular place. I was actually thinking, have you seen the Jeb Bush video where he's at the Rotary Club?
is that the one where, clap, please clap?
No. Recent...
Wait, he's still running?
Yeah, he's still in it, Tracy. Nobody really knows why, but...
That was...
It's pretty pathetic. But yeah, he was at the Rotary Club and talking, and then one of the hosts of the whatever luncheon or whatever kicked him off the stage, and it was just very awkward. He just yells, "They're kicking me off the stage," and then he just like backs down and then sits and like eats some yogurt or something, and no one's looking at him, and it was amazing. It was very good.
What wouldn't you give to be a fly on the wall up there in Kennebunkport listening to Mother Bush?
And there was a guy telling him at the table to leave, to walk out of the room.
He was like, "Oh, I want to finish my yogurt."
this happened at a Rotary Club in Australia, Andrew?
No,
up here.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a couple of days ago.
Jeb,
oh, interesting.
It's pretty funny. I love the whole, like, pathetic Deb stuff at the moment. It's like, you know, such a pathetic candidate at the moment. It's pretty, I feel sorry for him, to be honest.
Well, yeah, if they weren't such a bloody-fisted, grasping, avaricious, homicidally insane, psychopathic family, you would. You'd look at Jebya and go, well, that's just sad.
Yeah, you snap out of it when you think of all the horrible things they've actually done. Yeah.
You want to hear a little bit of irony, Bob?
Yeah, sure.
Tomorrow night, there's another Republican debate in South Carolina.
Again.
But guess what's happening at the same time?
Tomorrow, Saturday. What?
The first initial NASCAR race of the season.
Oh, Daytona, right?
Budweiser shootout.
Oh, okay. Where is that?
At the Daytona.
Oh, okay, so it is Daytona.
It's at the same time. It starts earlier than the debate.
Well, God, their ratings numbers will be in negative digits.
But if they wanted to reach people in South Carolina, I think there's a lot of NASCAR fans in South Carolina.
Well, maybe Rince Priebus is trying to keep people from hearing T-Rump. Maybe he's taking a page from Debbie Wasserman Schultz's book and trying to keep people from hearing the candidate that he doesn't like.
You know, I thought for the longest time, you know, I was one of those people that from the beginning was thinking, you know, oh, Trump can't be doing well. He can't be the nominee all the time. And, you know, now we're in a position where what? It looks like he's ahead in nearly every state. I have to think that the establishment of the Republican Party are going to have to, at some point, step in and do something. I can't accept that they're going to let this happen.
Well, I mean, they don't have a lot of choice unless they...
that's true.
Unless they plan... No, I mean, this could make for a very, very interesting convention because, see, you've probably heard the conversations and seen it hither and thither, Andrew. The business about the Democratic Party and the superdelegates.
What a stupid system. I mean, well, really.
The Republicans don't have them.
I know. Like, anyway.
So you can get an insurgency. You can get a floor fight.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, I'm all for a floor fight. And I hope they bring their guns. I mean, it's like something Lottie said in the chat room a couple of minutes ago. I said what I wouldn't give to be a fly on the wall in Kenny Bunkport, and Lottie said I'd rather be a mosquito on the wall in Kenny Bunkport carrying that deadly new Zika virus.
There you go.
Do they have open carry in Ohio?
Yes.
I was going to ask, haven't the Bush's heads already shrunk? Haven't they already been infected by the Zika virus?
Oh, ouch.
But no, that was affluencephalitis.
You know what happens when a white person doesn't? Well, he can't be held responsible for his actions because he's too rich and he doesn't know better. Fuck you.
Well, he knows what's going on now.
It's just yes, man. I did a jig. I said, you know, because right before that happened, when he killed those four people, a good friend of ours was killed by this young kid speeding down the street. And his parents had money, and nothing happened.
Hey, Tracy.
Yes,
got a question. Got a question for you.
Sure.
Is the affluenza defense limited just to white people?
Yeah.
No? Do you know that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not that I know, but come on.
I know. I think it's the ultimate manifestation of white privilege. You know,
the fact that, you know, I mean, it was invented, Rick, by his defense counsel. There's no way that defense counsel with a black teenager would ever say, hey, let's plead that he didn't understand what he was doing was wrong because he's had too many privileges in life.
Right.
No, no, no. Because if you walk, no, you walk into a courtroom and do that, you know, the judge himself may sign the call your carrier letter.
Yeah, the judge might actually get a lynch party together in that situation.
Yeah.
You know, if you're in the wrong courtroom in the South and try to pull that.
The last black man that got the only black man that's got away with an affluenza defense was O.J. Simpson.
Oh, okay.
Because my thing is, see, that young man, his lawyer earned every dime they paid him to come up with affluenza. That's what it did with the Tweaky defense.
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, it's the sort of thing that causes a law to get passed to, like, say, you can't use that defense anymore. Because California, after the Dan White trial where he raised the Twinkie defense, the law was modified in California to prevent or significantly limit diminished capacity defenses like that.
Well, he did go to prison for a while.
So what?
Yeah. Yeah, but on really the minor charges, I mean, you know. So, you know, and to think a jury believed that, I mean, geez, how stupid are people?
Look who he killed.
Yeah, I know.
He killed.
He killed an
activist man.
Yeah.
So, of course, the jury had to come up with a, what's the word I'm looking for?
A compromise verdict, a lesser.
Or something, because dealing, you know, so what? He killed a fat. Whatever.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, we could just, how do we justify this man killing another human being aside from his sexual orientation? Oh, yes, I know. Diminished capacity. He ate Twinkies.
Yeah.
He goes back here laughing. He's like, what?
I mean, you know, I know if I eat too much MSG, I sort of feel weird. So there you go. I mean, you just never know.
Sort of feeling weird and going out and killing people in cold blood.
Yeah, you know, I know.
I've noticed because I've been trying to change my diet and I've been eating pretty clean lately. And so, you know, I've noticed that I have more energy and I'm not quite as moody and evil. I mean, it's amazing what you put in your body and how it does have ill effects on you or adverse reactions. And I've seen the difference. I put on a pair of pants today that I haven't been able to wear in a year. And I'm like, and that's just from not eating stupid shit for 3 weeks.
That's great.
So it's like, I know, but then again, because of Bob and I had this conversation about, you know, being foodaholics and having no power over managing our addiction. But even then, no matter how much Bob and I or anybody else that I know that has some sense, we're not going to go around killing folks because we had too many Twinkies.
Right, right. Yeah, that was so absurd.
No, I love the way you express that. Anybody who's got some sense...
Well, what if this is what my grandmother used to say, you know, about common sense. It ain't so common. You know,
downright rare.
It's a wise lady, Tracy.
Yes.
Who said that?
Yes, she was. My grandmother used to come up with some stuff like, oh, you don't believe fat meat is greasy. Or I can show you better than I can tell you. So all these things she used to those things usually came right before the beatdown.
Oh, jeez. at least you could gird your loins, so to speak, and get ready for that.
My grandmother was old school Southern woman.
Yeah.
If you did something wrong, you had to go outside and get your own switch. Come on.
Yeah.
Man. And don't come back with a twig. Then she will go outside and uproot the tree. And the worst
I'll get a bigger
was,
one, yeah.
Yeah. The worst thing was she had a peach tree. Anybody know how thick peach tree branches are?
Oh, little peach limb?
Yes.
I got an apricot tree, and I don't know what they're like.
Yes. I mean, but see, the thing about my grandmother was, you know, yes, she ruled by fear and respect, half and ever. She didn't have, she very rarely had to repeat herself, and very rarely, once you did whatever you did, you never did it again. Or she scared you when she did all these things about saying what she said and you knew you were about to get killed. Usually, this just the scaring you for her was enough. Just the fact that she knew that you knew that at any given moment she could kill you, that was enough. Very rarely did my grandmother, you know, beat us or what have you. I mean, but like I said, when she did, it was no joke. But again, I'm still fine. You know, I'm not saying I would never uproot a tree to beat my child, but you know.
Yeah, well, you know, I understand what you're saying. I mean, the idea there is it's the, you know, effect of general deterrence. Like, I don't have to, I've got a big stick. I don't have to swing it much because you know what happens if you don't mind your,
yes.
You know, if you don't have good behavior. Because my dad had a pledge paddle because he was in a fraternity like in the 50s.
Did it have
and he would pull that thing out and whack us a few times if we got out of line. So.
Or just pulling it out was enough for you to stop whatever you were doing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly.
You know, I mean, when my son was little, and Will's going to get a kick out of this because Alex drives Will as well when I can't. He only had one temper tantrum. He's about 3 or 4 years old, and it was his first day at daycare. And this was, I had gotten there after taking two buses. So I had gotten off of bus number 2. And Alex didn't want to go home because he was having so much fun. And I'm like, okay. And so apparently a child that was, mother came previous to me, prior to me rather, her little boy wasn't ready to go. And so he fell out. So his mom let him stay longer, right? So this was a monkey see, monkey do. And Alex, and that's probably terrible when you refer to black people saying monkey see, monkey do. Anywho.
That one's on you.
Alex, I know, I said it. Then Alex tried to do the same thing. And you hear that laugh I just did? That was basically the laugh I did when he started that. And I just looked at him. And at that, I don't know if it was the laugh or the look or the combination, but talking about a cease and desist order, he took one look at me and just stopped dead. And because he's like, because basically what I was saying to him without saying anything was, you little, I have just been at work all day on my feet. I was a cashier at Ralph's. I have just taken 2 buses to come pick you up, and I have to get on a 3rd to go home. If you do not get your ass up right at this moment, the last thing you ever do. All that without saying a word. Never said a word. He got up, he went and got his jacket, and we went home. Never laid a hand on him. Didn't have to.
Well, that's good. I mean, you know, my ex is kind of like that with my son. You know, she tells him to knock something off and he knocks it off. Whereas with me, I'm more of a soft touch, so he'll like keep asking for something. Oh, Dad, please, please, you know. And you know, so he learned over the years to play us one against the other, and that caused a lot of friction between us, unfortunately.
Well, see, you know? And you know, I feel, you know, as much as I wish at times that, you know, Alex's father was involved in his life, regardless of whether or not we were a couple, I'm glad that I never had to go through that.
Yeah.
Single parent, one of the advantages of being a single parent, you don't have to deal with that. Because I see that all the time with my friends, and the, you know, and it's because kids are not stupid.
Oh, they know which parent to ask if they want something, or you know which one they can get away with more, and you know, yeah, they learn from a very young age.
They learn and they know, and it's like, okay, I can get away with this with dad, but I sure as hell can't do it with mom, or vice versa.
Yeah.
And mom or dad, you know, the one that's more stern and more of a disciplinarian, that's the bad parent, you know, the one that you're no fun, you know, I wish I lived with dad, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, it's very tough for both parents to be on exactly the same page. I'd say that very few parents can actually manage to do that, you know?
I tip my hat to anybody that can come.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I love being a parent. I love raising my son. I'm basically still raising him because he still lives at home. But who can?
Well, he's listening to the horn now, so he's an adult, is for all intents and purposes, right, Tracy?
Yeah. But my son, I think about that. We're going back to what we talk about in the horn and what Bob was talking about yesterday. My son moved out of the house when he was 18, and he did okay for a while, and I was very proud of him because he wanted to show that he could be an adult. But he had to move back home 2 years ago, and now it's going on 3. Because why? Because how can anybody make it out there? I giggle, like Bob was saying yesterday, about the incremental changes, about the living wage or whatever, the minimum wage.
Right, because if we just ask, if we ask the 1% very nicely, they might throw us a crumb.
Right. I'm sorry. I used to work, like I said, I worked at Ralph's. I was a journeyman cashier. I left Ralph's. Let's see, Alex, I started there in 1986. I worked there for 6 years. So I left it in 92. Yeah, because that's when I hurt myself. I left in 92. Journeyman cashier in 1992, and I was making $18 an hour then.
And you were in the UFCW?
Yes, local 1070. Now, I had, even working part-time, I have full benefits. I know the union isn't as strong as it was when I was working there, but it's still a union job. I have part-time, you got full medical. When I had Alex, it didn't cost me a dime. A dime. And I stayed at one of the best hospitals in Los Angeles at the time. And that's back when they actually kept the mothers for a day or two. You know, because now you have a baby within 12 hours, they kick you out.
Jeez.
And managed care. Thank you.
It's really crazy, because what if the new mother has like anemia from losing a lot of blood during the delivery, or you know, just by losing blood during the pregnancy and so forth. I mean, but you're going to basically send her back to work after a day or two in the hospital?
No, send her back home.
Send her back home. I mean, that's so ridiculous, though, you know, because
it is ridiculous.
It's just not enough time.
Yeah, but see, the other side of that coin is that you want to get mama and baby out of the hospital as quickly as you possibly can, because those freaking places are toxic.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, when I was pregnant with Alex, I had, dude, pick a freaking lane. Sorry.
Don't cross Tracy, man. Don't cut Tracy off. What are you thinking?
He wasn't even cutting me off. It's just that he was like, okay.
Oh, just wandering?
Yes. They're probably texting.
Was that the Southern California equivalent of the fellow we refer to around here as Willie Weaver?
Yes, absolutely.
Really, I like that.
But when I was pregnant with Alex, I went into false labor. I was, and they took me by, I was at church. Oh God, talk about embarrassing. So I'm at church. I went into labor, but it was, you know, and my mom's a nurse, and we had two physician assistants that were as members of my church at the time, and they basically cleared out the church, had me on one of the pews, and not in a very complimentary position, if you can tell, if you know what I'm saying. And so they called an ambulance to take me, because he wasn't crowning, but I was, you know, looking like I was going to deliver. And they took me to the closest hospital, which was Killer King, Martin Luther King Hospital. I said, if I have to suck this child back into my whatever, I will not have my child here. I worked way too hard to make sure I had him at Sentinella Hospital. But worst of all, they had some of the worst cases of sepsis in the county. My mom did her clinical rotation. She was an RN. She did her clinical rotation at King, and she was like, my grandbaby is not going to be born here.
Wow.
No, not happening. She's like, even if I have to get you and drive you to the hospital, because she's like, no. Fortunately, you know, nothing happened. I had 3 false alarms, and then Alex is like, okay, I'm coming. But...
Well, I want you to know that we've had another historic moment during the horn, and another historic moment, another historic broadcast milestone has been reached in independent internet-based broadcasting. I just got a note from Robert in New South Wales, and he simply said, "The lane change heard round the world."
There you go. There you go. And who says the butterfly flapping its wings in Southern California won't reverberate all around the world to Australia, right?
Yeah, or what? Or you know, one doofus on the 5.
There you go. Exactly.
No, actually, I'm not on the 5. I'm on the 15. I'm driving to Riverside. So
well, I got to just pick one because I mean, I got 999. I got 998 ways to be wrong and only one to be right.
Well, you know what? If I had been coming from another direction, at some point I might have been on the 5 to get down here. But because of where,
I just want to go for a ride on the 6 and 7/8.
Hey, Bob, next time when you ask Tracy where she is, what freeway she's on, you need to have Gerald weigh in. I'm sure he could guess that.
He probably could.
Yeah.
Well, she gave a clue. Well, as long as Riverside.
Yeah, right, you know, as well, I mean, Gerald could guess it as long as, you know, she's on the Hitler. Oh! 7:46. Damn it, Gerald!
You didn't. That was the first time you said that, huh?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Hey, Bob, I never asked you, what did you think of The Man in the High Castle?
Oh, I loved it, start to finish.
Yeah, too.
Agnes and
I... Is that the show on Amazon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agnes and I binge-viewed it.
Yeah.
I've seen the pilot. It looks really good.
Oh, it's fun, Andrew. It's really fun.
Yeah, no, I thought the pilot was amazing, so, yeah, I can't wait to watch it.
And it'll... Yeah. I mean, it will play with your mind. I'm no spoilers or anything. I'm under the assumption that we're done at the end of it. There's not going to be a season 2.
No, I think that's about it. You know, I think that was just based on his book, the Philip K. Dick book. But
yeah, that's right.
What surprised me is that in the context of the German command, Hitler was actually a moderate. Let's just leave it at that. I won't tell you guys anything else. Yes, exactly. right, Bob?
Yeah, and Philip K. Dick was also, let's remember, really insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he wrote the book Blade Runner was based on.
Not just insane, but really insane.
Yeah, whole bunches of crazy. And by the way, yes,
Federico.
Proof of the L.A. butterfly effect. Jennifer just said, and when the lane change occurred, I jumped and got egg yolk in my egg whites in my kitchen lab in Perth.
Oh my God! There you go.
Was that Jennifer that liked my breakfast this morning? I meant to send it to you. I did more food porn this morning, Bob.
Yes, it was, and I still have Carol's hush puppy recipe for you.
Okay, cool. But yeah, I did this morning because, like I said, I'm trying to change the way I eat. I had I did sweet potato noodles with kale. Both of which was sauteed in onions, garlic and coconut oil this time.
It's a little early for the food porn now, isn't it?
Well, no, it's not bad. And then I cracked an egg over that. I mean, I had egg sunny side up on that for breakfast. And if you check you guys go to my Facebook page, just a picture. But just the fact that I had that and I was full until like 4 hours later. It's just amazing because, like you said, us people who love to eat the metabolic disorders, I like that. I like that. It's so much nicer than saying just flat out fat.
Yeah, big boned.
Big boned. Big boned.
Right.
Boned it.
Well, hey, I do kind of want to shift gears for a minute if I can, because I don't want to let this go unaddressed. I had an email from Michael in Madison about 50 minutes ago, and the subject line is "Good old Hank Kissinger." Because you know we had another one of those Kissinger love-in moments last night.
That was awesome about Bernie.
He gave it to a big time about Kissinger. That was
well,
great.
We don't know who your foreign policy advisors are.
They ain't Kissinger.
that was
straight out of Bugs Bunny. That was straight out of Flatbush. You know, that was
right.
What's that line? Where Bugs is dealing with the two Louisiana the two French chefs, and they're each trying to cook him in Paris.
I don't remember that.
And Bugs tells him,
"Yeah, well, if you don't cook me, I'll teach you how to make your Back Bay Bunny Bayou Bordelais a la Antoine's."
and the two French chefs say, "Antoine's? The Antoine of New Orleans?" And Bugs calmly replies, "I ain't talking about Antoine of Flatbush." and that's immediately what I thought of last night with Bernie. It ain't gonna be Kissinger. And the look. Jesus God, the look she gave him. I mean, if looks would kill, he would have gone away in pieces in a basket.
There you go.
And she marked out something on her script, and I think it was bring up Henry recommendation again. That played so well. But Michael writes, it says, shortly before the show, I heard a pair of allegedly progressive pro-Hillary talkers on an allegedly progressive talk show mocking Bernie for raising the issue of Kissinger. It was, Michael says, stunningly condescending. One of the talkers alleged that millennials have no idea who Kissinger is. Hell, he expanded it and said that no one under 50 knows who Kissinger is. Under 50? Says Michael.
Hey, I'm still under 50, so I know who he is.
Right, so, but Michael, under 50? What the, says Michael. He says, I have lost my patience with that particular show, that's for sure, and I don't know which show it was. Apparently.
I bet it's Stephanie Miller.
Well, I mean, it was just an hour or so before this program.
Okay.
But Michael says, I've lost my patience with that particular show, that's for sure. Apparently Bernie supporters are just morons who know nothing of history, and we are incapable of using the Google machine. Then, of course, this pair of hillbots began to praise Kissinger for his breadth of experience and his statesmanship. Wait, we got a reverb for that. Statesmanship! So, Michael says, no one fucking knows who the man is. Bernie's a doddering old fool living in a different time. Yet Kissinger, at 92, is a really neato and important stand-up guy and all-around great advice giver. The cognitive dissonance is giving me a headache.
Oh, I love that. It's cognitive dissonance.
The thing is, Hillary mentioned that he was one of her advisors, I think, at the previous debate. So he just picked up that thread and ran with it. He should have said something at the last debate. Henry Kissinger? He was probably shocked. He was like dumbfounded at that debate, saying like, what the F, you know?
Well, right. I mean, because when she mentioned it in the last pageant, I you didn't.
Yeah.
But she did. And you know, I was confronted by a hilarian earlier today saying, well, you know, she only consulted him on you know, matters like China, and show me any time in the last decade when she's had anything to do with him. So, you know, like Michael, I used the Google machine. And I found a review that she wrote of Kissinger's book World Order, in which she said, "Henry Kissinger is a friend of mine. When I was Secretary of State, he checked in with me regularly, sharing astute observations about foreign leaders and sending me written reports on his travels."
Jeremiah was a bullfrog, and he was a friend of mine, so what?
Yeah, right, but see, that was last year, and the challenge was to find her having any contact with him in the last decade.
Jeez.
And so I put that out there, and oddly enough, this woman who was, singing, she dried right up.
Wow.
Just crickets.
Hey, to take Tracy up on her comment, wasn't Jeremiah a wino, Tracy?
Yeah.
Like a drunk? A street bum, basically, right? Yeah.
Yeah, well.
I know.
I'd rather claim Jeremiah.
Yeah.
As a friend, than Henry Kissinger.
Oh, God.
Jeremiah knows how to have fun, okay?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Henry's kind of like that guy in the Hunger Games who basically, what's the guy played by Donald Sutherland?
Yes.
Who has basically blood, I don't know what it is. It's got, blood.
Now, easy there. I was told I look like him, so,
Well, yeah.
now that I've let the hair grow down past my collar and everything, so.
Oh.
But no, what Michael says, I take very seriously that millennial, if that's the nature of the slur coming from the Hillary camp, that, it doesn't matter that Henry killed millions of people. I mean, that was so,
long ago.
It doesn't matter that he prolonged the Vietnam War by 5 or 6 years. That was so 1967. So I would like to perform a public service, and we create an archive of every program, and anybody that wants to can clip this out, and we can send it around to all the people who are going, "Who? Henry what?" And by the way, I've also been accused of using Republican talking points in criticizing her relationship with Henry, which kind of made me. It made me do one of these, where what? I just bang my head off the microphone. Because Republicans love Henry Kissinger. They find it to be a feature and not a flaw of Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton that she hobnobs around with him.
Of course.
I mean, he was like the forerunner to this whole, idea of New World Order and the Project for a New American Century and so forth. I mean, these people probably get orgasmic when they think about Henry and, bombing all those people in Cambodia and, all the people he killed,
Oh yeah, it turns them on. And meanwhile, we've had a little help from the impromptu Horn Research Department. Herman just wrote in and said, the name of that Bugs Bunny cartoon is entitled French Rarebit. Hope this is helpful. And it is. French Rarebit. Look it up. It's pretty, I don't mean Antoine's a flatbush. It ain't gonna be Kissinger. But by way of a public service to try to help out voters who might not know just exactly who in the living hell it is that Hillary Clinton thinks so forsaken much of, I just happened to have before me a string of really, really Jim Dandy, no kidding, can't beat him, Henry Kissinger quotes. I
saw these circulating the internet today.
Yeah, I like to call this the Henry Kissinger paragon of morality list.
Bob, wasn't he friends with Nazis as well?
If somebody's been bad on Earth, Henry's been a buddy.
Okay.
I mean, Jesus, he was. If you transported him to Middle Earth, he'd be taking sandwiches to Mirkwood to help the necromancer turn back into Sauron. let's see, it was March 10th, 1975, when he was meeting with Turkish Foreign Minister Meli Ezenbel in Ankara, Turkey, when he said, "The illegal we do immediately, the unconstitutional takes a little longer."
Ugh.
Where is Kissinger from?
Huh?
Where is Kissinger from?
He's from Germany.
So he's not
Austria?
No, I think Germany, and you know, he's Jewish.
Okay.
Which makes this one a little surprising. This is during the Cold War. The emigration of Jews from the Soviet Union is not an objective of American foreign policy. And if they put Jews in gas chambers in the Soviet Union, it is not an American concern, maybe a humanitarian concern. Mein Führer, I can walk! No, sorry, that's not in there.
Oh, jeez.
No, okay, without the funny voice.
No,
if they put Jews into gas chambers in the Soviet Union, it is not an American concern. Maybe humanitarian concern.
So he's basically saying there that he was in favor of, you know, ships like the St. Louis that had all those Jewish immigrants being turned away and sent back to Germany so they could be, the Jews could be slaughtered, basically.
Well, he wasn't in the United States back then, but...
If he were, he'd be saying, send them home. Jeez.
Referring to the foreign minister of the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia, he said, how many people did he kill? Tens of thousands? You should tell the Cambodians that we will be friends with them. They are murderous thugs, but we won't let that stand in the way. We are prepared to improve relations with them. Tell them the latter part, but don't tell them what I said before. And then there was the time that he mocked Robert McNamara after what Robert McNamara said about the Vietnam War. As he mocked him by rubbing his eyes, he said, boo-hoo, boo-hoo. He's still beating his breast, right? Still feeling guilty.
Who's Robert McNamara, Rob?
Anybody want to take this one?
Secretary of Defense, Vince Johnson.
And obviously he was saying that he had regrets about the Vietnam War. Is that what the issue was?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was one of the architects of the buildup of troops during the Vietnam War. And he later came to regret it once he realized, you know, the truth. I guess he knew the truth. He felt guilty for lying to, you know, officials about how things were going.
Did you watch that documentary, Fog of War?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, pretty depressing.
Well, it is, and see, the point that's being made in a lot of a lot of articles, Andrew, is that there's a straight line that draws from that can be drawn from Kissinger's realpolitik to then Secretary of State Clinton's realpolitik. I mean,
not completely. Yeah.
I mean, there's this. Speaking to the National Security Council in 1975, when we began the process of trying to clean up some of the Nixonian filth, he said, "It is an act of insanity and national humiliation to have a law prohibiting the president from ordering assassination."
Oh my goodness!
Oh jeez. This guy would have fit in perfectly with Hermann Göring and
he should have been all by himself in some prison somewhere since about 1975.
Right.
But we studiously protected him and kept him and he didn't go anywhere near the countries that took the time to indict him.
He's been indicted by other countries, huh, Bob?
Pretty sure of it.
He never goes to Europe.
And then of course he engineered the bloody coup in Chile, deposing the democratically elected Salvador Allende government, and putting what's the phrase Republicans like to use? Brutal dictator Augusto Pinochet in office.
Yeah.
And of Chile, he said, I don't see why we need to stand by and watch a country go communist due to the irresponsibility of its people. The issues are much too important for the Chilean voters to be left to decide for themselves.
Wow.
Jesus Christ, somebody write this bastard into the next Star Wars movie. I mean, you put him on a Death Star or something. But then again, he got written into Doctor Strangelove, so there's that.
Jeez.
Well, I've never really had Facebook debates on my Facebook page. And fortunately, since most of my friends are, you know, reasonable people, it wasn't, you know, there was nothing ugly, you know. But I started off with Phil the Bird and all this, and I was, you know, tweeting my little stuff, like, about, you know, what he said about, well, sure as hell, like Kissinger, and I don't know what economists you're listening to.
Uh-oh. Did we lose Tracy?
Must have.
Oh, damn. That's too bad.
Maybe she's in a dead spot.
Well, I mean, she still shows connected, though.
Hmm. I mean, if anybody wants to know the exact date the bombing of Cambodia ended, it's forever ingrained in my brain. August 15th, 1973.
Wow.
Where were you that day?
I was on leave, but I got to the base where all the bombing was coming from 10 days after they quit bombing on August 25th, 1973.
Okay.
So that's how I remember it.
Wow.
You were 7, Tracy. I was, I guess I was 13.
Man, it's just, you know, I'm at a weird age. I was born in a weird time because I was born, you know, toward the end of the remnants of the 60s civil rights movement into the Black Power movement and then into, you know, so this is part of my lifetime. The Vietnam War, even though I don't remember it, I do remember seeing stuff, you know, kind of, you know, flashes of memory, watching, you know, the bodies come off the planes and stuff like that. It is just crazy to me that this was within my lifetime. But what is really killing me are these people who act like millennials are stupid. Because the thing about millennials is they have the Google machine, people.
Well, yeah, and I mean, and what, you know, once again, I think the Hilarians are doing what they're proving themselves very good at, and that is condescending to and being otherwise crappy to people who don't want to vote for their candidate for whatever reason. I mean, you saw the Nevada poll out today, right?
No.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
Yeah, close. Hillary's hemorrhaged another 30-point lead. It's now 45-45 in Nevada.
Oh, my God.
Awesome.
You want some good news that I heard from Nevada?
Yeah.
The IBEW local in Las Vegas endorsed Bernie Sanders.
Of course they did.
The local has 4,000 members, and don't think a bunch of them will be out beating the streets.
Mm. Well, it's like, you know, I told you guys in 2008, I flew to Nevada on my own dime to caucus for Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And now this was 2008, and Hillary was her supporters. You think they were locking the doors and of the auditoriums that people were, you know, and sending out misinformation about where people were to caucus.
That's Republican tactics, Tracy.
Right, and then but it gets even better. So I'm there, you know, just to sign people up to check their names off and stuff like that. They try to get into my face because I was from California and said, well, you can't be here campaigning. I'm like, yo, homie, That's what the campaign is. Just checking names off. But the best part of the whole thing was that we were having internet issues, and at the time I had my own hot private Wi-Fi. Yes, I had a hot box. And so I fired it up. That sounds so terrible. And we had internet.
Double entendres being served on the
Hot and fresh.
And I hot and fresh. And I fired it up so I could tell people where they could, because there was this misinformation about where they were to go to caucus. And so, I went on the internet and put in their zip codes and told them where they're, because there was a few people that have been, every Barack Obama supporter that I had talked to that day who had, they got sent misinformation about where, what precinct or where they were supposed to go in caucus. And I'm and ever since then, I've had a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, really?
Yeah, during the 2000 primary season, I wanted to go to Nevada. I just couldn't get out there for whatever reason because I was an Obama supporter early on. And, I really was put off by the tactics of Hillary in, just trying to, just some of the issues. I don't know if she did any, she might have done some race baiting. I forget what exactly happened. I know she tried to portray him as misogynistic, for one thing. I remember that. She tried to play the victim, and
do you remember the big stink that was caused? There was a song that was popular at the time back in 2008. And the Hilarians got themselves all in an uproar because at some point in time her campaign had said he said something and didn't Barack Obama casually reply, "Yeah, well, I got 99 problems."
And a bitch ain't one.
I have a question there.
Yeah, anyway, go ahead, Larry.
Go ahead, Larry. Yeah. Hi there, folks. The thing is that a couple questions. Number one, how are we going to be able to get the mainstream African American voters to get behind Bernie Sanders? That's number one. Oh, and also the Hispanic voters, because we need so they'll turn out for Bernie. And then number two, I was listening, I don't know if it was the Max Kaiser report with Herbert or last night I was listening. They were saying that in Montana that there's a big alarming rate of suicides and heroin usage and drug usage amongst middle class white males. And I haven't verified that. I assume it's probably...
That's a national problem, Larry.
Okay. So, in any case...
it's a national problem, but it's also, I think, it tends to be more prevalent in more of your rural areas, if I'm not mistaken, Bob.
I think you may be right, Rick. But it's demographically, it is white males born roughly between 1963 and or 1961 and 1971, because we had kind of an extensive discussion of that a few months back.
Right. Yeah, I'm in that cohort.
Well, and we had a nice long talk about that. Now,
yeah.
As for I'm not being critical, Larry. As for your first question, Charles Blow had a really solid article, opinion piece in the New York Times, today or yesterday, about white progressives and the black vote. And I'm getting a little, well, I feel uneasy even opining about the black vote. Because nobody wants to be a monolith. And there's a lot of stuff, as Charles Blow pointed out, that's freighted into or along with questions about that, that display a pretty disturbing level of disassociation of white folks, once again, not getting it. And in that column, there's a long and informative and instructional quote from James Baldwin. And so I simply recommend going and reading it. And, you know, before I get anywhere near white-splaining, I'll shut up. And, you know, Tracy, if you want to field that.
Okay, because I was just telling Will goodbye. He's going in to get ready for his hockey game. Now, are we talking about white people not getting the fact that they have privilege no matter what social class they're from and whining about shit? Is that what I'm hearing?
No. It's the question. Okay, I'm echoing.
Oh, Larry, you got to mute.
Okay. Now, the question that Larry asked, and which is being bandied about, is this notion that the for-profit media, and particularly the Clinton campaign, have promulgated that they just, you know, she's going to sweep the nomination once she gets into states where there is the black vote because black people just love them some Hillary.
Oh, so they didn't. So I guess they didn't read the Michelle Alexander article.
No, but at the risk of getting myself in trouble, and in fact, Charles Blow cites to that article, which may have been a devious way on his part to try to get more people to read it.
Yeah,
because that's a damning article.
I think I read that article, as a matter of fact. Why? And like, this is perfect about, because like I said yesterday, you and I were live tweeting over the debate. And I think I started off with you with, oh, look, Bob, Hillary cares about coal people. Wow. But one of the things that troubles me is the fact that all these, I had a friend, he moved back from here to Atlanta. And so he jumped on my case about, you know, being a Bernie supporter and saying that I'm not based in reality. And let me see if I can find my Facebook. But basically, the arguments that were coming in justification of why I should not vote for Barney is because he was too old. And I'm like, okay, and, you know, and the stress that's about the presidency. And I said, well, shit, I'm watching the debate, and the only person that's looking stressed is Hillary. And then I said, you know, your argument about Clinton, about me not voting for Hillary, I mean, not voting for Bernie because he's too old and he might die, is the same argument that people were saying not to vote for Barack Obama because he might get assassinated.
Or he was a smoker.
No, but it's just that yeah. fallacy, that you know, and I was just like, black folks, now, this is when we need the angry Indian, because he would go off. But black folks are so misinformed about the Clintons. They got this pie in the, you talk about idealism and what pie in the sky and all this other bullshit that people are saying about Bernie supporters. Does, you know, black folks should never want Hillary Clinton in office. What did she say about black people? About the roving hordes? What?
Oh, about super predators who have to be brought to heel?
Brought to heel. Okay? She was pandering to the white working class Democrats There's an article on my Facebook page about that, about how they try to distance themselves so far away from the, this is not going to be a rainbow coalition. We're going to law and order. They took a page from the Reagan handbook and did worse to Black people than Ronald Reagan's policies ever did. But nobody is talking about that. And I want Bernie Sanders. See, I want somebody with some big, hairy, dragon on the floor balls to finally have the nerve to roll up on Hillary and say, yo, bitch.
Seriously? Well, there went tonight's gas station pizza.
Okay. Seriously? You're pandering to the Black folk when you and your husband did more to put Black men in jail? Three strikes law? Seriously? Mandatory minimums? Seriously? You talking about that shit, bitch? Welfare reform? For real? Oh, player.
But I gotta say, it's good that in the past, you know, week or two, that kind of information has slowly been disseminating. So I think the more that this information comes out with those types of articles, I think things might change.
And Andrew, yes?
Yes.
I that is what I love about our millennials. Will's sister goes to is a freshman at Lewis and Clark University up in Oregon Way. And she is a huge Bernie supporter, right? And she just turned 18, so this is her first election. And I am so jealous of her, because when I turned 18 in 1984, who did I have? Who was running?
Was it Mondale?
Mondale.
And you know what? Had it not been for the superdelegate system, Gary Hart might have beaten him and been the nominee.
Right. But then, you know, Gary Hart.
But then the monkey business thing came into play, so he wouldn't have been the nominee anyway.
Right.
No. The monkey business stuff didn't come along until the next, until 88.
Oh, okay.
To the next election. So, who's echoing? Am I echoing?
It's Larry.
Okay. So, you know, when you do your research, and I can honestly say, And for full transparency, y'all, had I not become a more informed voter and a more informed American, I would have been drinking the Hillary Clinton Kool-Aid as well. But because I have a brain, and because of the Google machine, because let's face it, in 1992, wait, when did Clinton run? Was it 92 or 96? Yes. So
yes,
in 92 and 96, we weren't really listening. I didn't know anything about dog whistle politics, right? We didn't have the Google machine back in 92 and 96 to be able to call people on their bullshit when they said stuff and to say, wait, yes, this is what you said. Oh, no, I didn't. Hey, let's go to the Google machine and say, Google that shit, bitch. I've actually said that, Google that shit, bitch. And go back and see what these atrocities are. Like with Kissinger, again, very still new to the political process and all that it entails. Half and ever, I know enough that if Kissinger was Nixon's Secretary of State, that's all I needed to know. You know? It's these things that even if I...
Yeah, and he was Ford's Secretary of State, too.
See, exactly. So you're listening. You got to do that at that point where that guilt by association.
Well, there's a basic maxim in the law. A word is known by the company it keeps. A person is known by the company he or she keeps. Like Hillary, if she's friends with Kissinger, what does that tell you about Hillary?
Oh, can I call a quick timeout?
Yeah.
Because I want to hit on a couple of more points from the debate. But I also need to mention at this time that Steve kindly put a $25 challenge on the table at the beginning of the program. It has thus far gone unanswered. And we got $340 to raise this evening, now in the space of about 36 minutes. But that was not the main reason for my interrupting. When they got to the, and you know, these really are pageant questions. I'm just grateful for the fact that nobody's in a swimsuit. But they are. When we got to the question about, so, who do you admire? Well, Bernie answers first, and he says FDR, and then he hauls out Winston Churchill. And frankly, I could have done without the Winston Churchill reference because Winston Churchill.
Agreed.
Andrew, you probably.
Yeah, but he was just talking about that one little space of time.
At least
that Bernie actually said, you know, that he didn't like the conservatism of Churchill.
Right, exactly. So he did qualify it. But oh my God, when Hillary said Nelson Mandela.
Oh my fucking God! I'm like, really, bitch. It was a really bitch.
Pander much?
Yeah. I mean,
pander? Why didn't you just go full hog?
Why didn't you go full Dr. King?
I said it first.
She could have gone for Malcolm X.
That wasn't gonna happen, homie.
No, because the moderate Republicans who think that she's such a liberal would have had a baby if she'd said Malcolm. I guess James Baldwin is out of the question, too. Ain't going to be no W.E.B. Du Bois, either.
She should have gone for, if she was going to do it right, she should have went for Booker T. Washington.
Ooh, now that's cold.
Yeah, I know. Did I stutter?
But we know why that's cold, so.
Yes.
No, I heard her say Nelson Mandela, and I thought, ma'am? When they were first sticking him in a South African hellhole, you were a Goldwater girl. You were down with that by definition.
They probably would have called him a terrorist.
Well, yes.
Yeah, of course they would have.
Like Dick Cheney.
Wait, hold up. Remember who? About the, you know, who about Bernie Madoff and how I talked about how Richard Dreyfuss played him, the night or the day that the show came on or the miniseries, I think it was the last Wednesday, and he was on The View. And so Whoopi or whoever asked him, of all the people you play besides Bernie Madoff, who do you think was more hated? He said Dick Cheney.
Tracy, you have been given a formal title. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, refers to you as Tracy, Lady Cab Driver, Philosopher, Teacher, and Mentor.
Very cool.
That's from
Carol Baker. That's awesome.
Bob, I just wanted to mention a couple days ago I went to see Richard Wolff. And amongst the things that he was talking about, he talked about instability, he used the oil markets as an example. He talked about injustice and talked about the car companies being unjust. And then as far as, and he talked about the Oxfam report and the income inequality. But he also mentioned that Bernie in New Hampshire and Iowa, he got 80-something percent of the vote of the 18-year-old to 29-year-old vote. He got 80% of that total. And the people that mostly voted for Hillary apparently were high-income people and people 65 or older. So I don't know how that's going to play out in the rest of the primary season, but that's what's happening now. I wanted to ask Andrew. I'm making an assumption that you're British.
Australian.
Australian then. I'm sorry. I apologize. I really do apologize. I'm sorry. But the question that I have to ask is about Jeremy Corbyn, because we don't talk very much about Jeremy Corbyn, who apparently, according to Richard Wolff, is leading a movement toward worker self-directed worker co-ops and worker self-directed enterprises. That's something that Richard Wolff has been pushing. Where do you think, how long do you think we're going to be, or do you think we're going to be able to go in that direction, or what do you think?
I've got to say, in my opinion, there's a lot of similarities between the whole Corbyn movement and the Bernie Sanders movement. You know, both people who were sort of seen on the fringes of the left. When Corbyn started his campaign to lead the Labour Party, you know, he was the joke. Everyone thought he was a joke. He had no support. I think like one or two people in the whole House of Commons supported him. And over time, his support grew larger and larger and larger. And when they actually went to vote to become Labour leader, he got the most amount of votes in Labour's history. They didn't even need to go to the second round. About Labour, I can't speak too much about the whole Labour movement. But I do see a lot of similarities between Corbyn and Sanders' campaign. Unfortunately, in Australia, we're sort of left with nothing like that. We have a really bad government at the moment. And our Labour Party are pretty pathetic. We do have a strong Greens Party, but they sort of never have enough seats to form government. So,
are you guys any better than you were under John Howard with your current government, Andrew?
No, because John Howard was in there for a long time, I think like 11 years or such.
Yeah.
And I did, of course, a lot of damage. And then we had the Labour Party for two terms. And really, the Labour Party, see a lot of similarities with the Democratic Party. The Labour Party in Australia is a completely worthless opposition. They can barely call them progressive at all.
And they, didn't they just, for all intents and purposes, self-destruct?
Oh, yeah, they were a complete mess internally. They went through about,
backstabbing.
Changing leaders. They kept leaking, and they were their own worst enemy. And the Liberal Party pretty much just had to stand at the side and wait to be elected.
You managed to. Tony Abbott was just awful. Malcolm Turnbull's no better.
Look, in terms of as a person, every day you'd wake up and go, okay, what embarrassing thing did Tony Abbott do? And it'd be on the front pages of all the Australian newspapers and all of that, because he was a complete insane person. Turnbull is not an embarrassment as a person, you know, doing whatever. But in terms of the policies barely changed. They're still anti-climate change. They're still trying to undo a lot of working rights. They're very, very pro-corporate. Turnbull is actually the second richest. Well, for a long time, he was the richest MP in Australia's history. He's worth many hundreds of millions of dollars. He was a merchant banker. The Liberal Party is just, counterintuitively because of the name, is a very right-wing, religious, anti-science party.
They'd fit right in amongst the teabaggers.
They would. There's a couple of Liberal MPs who go to America and speak at, like, you know, the Family Association and anti-abortion things, and they use a lot of these right-wing American tactics and bring it back to them. Bring it back to Australia. So, in fact, Tony Abbott is actually very soon going to speak at some fringe anti-abortion clavern somewhere. So that's nice. Anyway, so, and at the moment, the Labour Party are a nothing party. They have no policies, no ideals. It's been overtaken by the corporatist wing of the Labour Party, and I mean, I personally just support the Green Party because they support what I support, and they are doing quite well. They've grown a lot in the past decade.
Question coming from Jennifer for you, Andrew. Can you riff a bit on the defunct Democrats Party?
What does that mean?
I guess there was
talk about sweetheart. Talk about.
No. There was. I guess there was a to riff means to extemporize. About. Mm-hmm. I guess there was a party down there that was the Democrats' party.
Oh, yes, that's how much they went away. I forgot about the Democrats.
You mean both of them? Right.
Right, so the Democrats were actually a centrist party. Their slogan was, keep the bastards honest. They're actually started by a man, Don Chip, who split off from the Liberal Party. And yeah, they were basically a centrist party. They're in the Senate because in our Senate it's proportional, so it's not.
Awesome.
So in our Senate we have a lot of minor parties as opposed to the House, which is basically just the two parties and one Green. So they were a big force in the Senate for quite a while. They, you know, governments needed to. Talk with the Democrats to pass legislation. And then the big thing that happened in the 90s was the Liberal Party at the time under Howard wanted to introduce a GST, a 10% goods and services tax, which we didn't have at the time. And a lot of the supporters in the Democrats were lefties, to be honest, but they weren't as left as the people in the Green Party. And then, so a lot of them wanted the Democrats to just flat out block the GST. And instead of doing that, some of the leadership of the Democrats agreed to sort of work things out with the Liberals and sort of compromised. So we had sort of a hodgepodge GST where it would apply to, say, a cooked chicken. But a raw chicken, it wouldn't apply. It wouldn't apply to education and stuff like that. Anyway, so that caused a big split in the Democrat Party, both the supporters and the senators, into a left and a right faction. And over time, it just sort of dissolved because people just weren't happy with them bowing down to the Liberal Party. And a lot of them left to the Greens. And now they are not a party, pretty much.
Wow.
Well, that was a nice disquisition all the way around. Thank you.
That's all right.
Well, I mean, John Fox, who was in the room earlier, in the chat room earlier, John Fox used to keep us all up to date on Australian politics, and I found it quite fascinating. Jennifer just said. The extra voice helped a bit. She said, I miss Natasha Stott Despoja?
Yeah, Despoja.
Despoja. I miss Natasha Stott Despoja, if only to say her name.
Yeah, look, she was one of the leaders of the progressive part of the party. Meg Lees was sort of the head of the more conservative part. And Natasha was a leader at some point, and very quickly the Meg Lees factions did a lot of undermining of her, and then she had to step down. So yeah, it was a bit of a crappy time for them.
Well, okay, that explains, and now I know how to pronounce the name. I got a note coming in from Jay Cruzen, subject line superdelegates. Just a quick question, Bob. At what point do you think Bernie should start talking about the superdelegate problem? It seems very possible that Hillary may win even if Bernie wins every state remaining by narrow margins. Do you think the Democratic Party could survive that? You know, this is the anatomy of political gamesmanship. The superdelegate thing has been promulgated by Hillary's partisans as a means of trying to suppress the Bernie vote. Oh, you know, Hillary's already got to the superdelegates. It doesn't matter if you win every state. She's still going to crush you because she's got all the superdelegates. So why are you stupid Bernie voters even going to go vote? Go smoke a blunt or something. And it might work. The only way you talk about the so-called superdelegate problem is to say that it's not a problem. Because historically, they were trying the same tactic in 2008.
I was going to say, isn't this just what happened with Obama? I mean, I can't believe how similar the Clinton campaign is operating. The you know, when Sanders now is getting more votes and all of that, she's now doing more underhanded stuff. This whole superdelegate stuff. I mean, I don't know if this time it's going to shoot itself in the foot, but she doesn't seem to be really learning from last
time.
Well,
see, one of the marketing points, not talking points, but marketing points early on was that, well, you know, this is not the same campaign she had in 2008. This is a totally different campaign. She's smarter. She knows that she's tougher. No, she's not. This is the same campaign using the same sleazy tactics. They're already push polling in Nevada. Yeah. As a Hispanic man, what if I told you that Bernie Sanders hates Hispanics?
Oh my God.
Would you still vote for him? Would you still vote for him even if you knew he was a communist who supports sending your mother to Antarctica? just pure political filth, and it's the only way the Clintons know how to operate.
That's Lee Atwater territory, Bob. That kind of shit.
Well, sure it is, and it's David. It's David, but it's David Brock territory too.
Yeah,
David. Mm-hmm. You know, David Brock was useful enough when he crossed over supposedly to the side of good and decency. Now the man's a hatchet man. Whichever side he's on, he's scum. Okay, he's Lee Atwater with fashionable glasses. Just yuck. But just to finish off the superdelegate thing, the only way to talk about it is to talk about the fact that it's not a problem, because the superdelegates are not going to go against the will of the people. They don't dare.
Because, unless, you know, they want to destroy the Democratic Party.
Right. And which Andrew, they might very well, I mean, they would be doing that for sure, but they would also be destroying their own careers.
Mm.
Because if they're in a district that Bernie carries and they vote against Bernie anyway, then life gets real interesting next election.
This is the, you know, like you said, the best way to confront the problem is to say that there is no problem. And fortunately, you know, as crazy as our process is, at least we're not Republicans. Because like you said, I want a floor fight during the Republican convention. When is that shit?
I'm guessing July, August.
Oh, wouldn't that be a fucking great birthday gift for me? July.
That would be a hoot. That would make my summer. It would be like Christmas in July.
Hey, Google it.
Yeah, we do have the Google machine.
Republican Convention, Cleveland.
It is in Cleveland?
Yeah. Hello, Cleveland.
We'll have to have Billow send us some reports from Cleveland, Bob.
Yeah, absolutely.
July 18 to 21.
Yeah.
So it ends on my birthday, y'all.
But like I was saying before, like, there's still a small part of me all through this that thinks that Trump is doing this as a very elaborate joke, that he truly doesn't want to be president. He's surprised how good he's done, and he's decided, okay, let's just see how long I can do this, and eventually he's going to make up some excuse and leave. Other than that, well, what do you think the Republicans' leadership can do to
I can't sell that theory short, because, you know, everybody talks about Trump on The Apprentice. Nobody talks about Trump in professional wrestling.
Oh, yes.
And what he's doing now is far more professional wrestling than NBC reality TV. He's done everything but hit Jeb Bush with a damn folding chair.
Did you listen to his speech when he won in New Hampshire?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
When the MAGA, I had two favorite parts. So my second favorite part was when he said, "Oh, you know, the real unemployment rate is 30, etc., up to, I heard somewhere, 42% unemployment." What? Who is this person?
Alex Jones was the source for that, I suppose.
And then my favorite part was when, it might have been subtle, but he insulted his audience. when he said, you know, I think it's 42% unemployment, he looked at his crowd and said, really, do you think if there was so, you know, talking about Obama's numbers, do you think if there was so little unemployment, all you would all be here? Just amazed me.
Oh, that's lovely, because the real question is, do you think if Obama wasn't that color, you'd all be here? I mean, because oh, you know, that's what that boils down to. Well, coming back to Jay Cruzan for a minute and the superdelegates, he says, Bob, I understand what you're saying, but anywhere you look, that's how the count is being tabulated. Hillary 394, Bernie 44. That's not a tabulated count. That is a fantasy being promulgated by the Hillary people. And that's the only talking point for it. That's not real.
Yeah,
the only delegate count is the delegate count that takes place at the convention.
Right.
Yeah, or after all the primaries are over, before the convention, when the delegates then state what their affiliation is going to be. Because, you know, in 2008, the same thing happened. I mean, the count looked, you know, a lot closer than it should have been based on how good Barack Obama was doing in the primaries and caucuses. And yeah, I think it is a ploy by the Hillarians, I think, to try to, you know, suppress the Bernie supporters, get them disenchanted and so forth. And
right, central to their operative theory is that millennials are, like, you know, stoned and shit, you know, like, you know, they like, you know, just like, you know, they like Bernie because they think they're gonna get like some free school or something, you know. Or maybe they won't be eaten up with student debt until they're like 70.
And if you just tell them,
you know, you can't have that, never ever. And so, like, you know, it won't work. And by the way, I've got all the delegates, so all the millennials will just go like, "Fuck it, man."
I got an idea for a song, like to kind of a Valley Girl riff about Hillary's superdelegates. Can somebody do that in the horn community? I bet somebody can.
I got to have a little more to work with there, Rick.
Well, you know, the theme is there. I mean, just, you know, you kind of talk about all the superdelegates. Forget about it. We got it. You know, we got all the superdelegates. And, you know, for sure, it's like really, you know, bitch.
Yeah, no. This is like, okay, I can say for she's on my nizzle. No, but no. But like, what Bob was saying about the, you know, the millennials, because, see, you know, like, oh my God, we don't, you know, they don't get that shot, man. They're stupid, they're stoned, and they're kids. They don't know what the real world is like.
They just want free marijuana, you know?
Right. Yes. You know what? You know why the millennials? They know what the fucking world is like, because, see, it's, they have seen this country, you know, through the eyes of what could the possibilities, okay? They're the new, not so much the civil rights movement, but they're the same ones. They're saying, why do we have to wait? Why do we have to sit back and wait for us not to be in horrendous debt? I just checked how much I owe in student loans, and I haven't even gotten my degree yet. I am like 40 grand in the rears.
Oh, geez.
And see, the very youngest voter by November will have been born in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
That youngest voter has never known, for all intents and purposes, because of what happened on September 11th, 2001, when that child would have been turning three, they've never known an America at peace.
Mm. Never.
And they have watched their friends, especially in poorer areas of the country, they've watched their friends go off and not come back. Or if they came back, have completely shattered souls.
Yep.
They know more than the Hilarians think they know. And I go back to what I've been hammering on for several days now. It is their world. Not mine, not Bernie's, not Hillary's. It is their world, and frankly, if you want to be an older candidate, you'd better by God acknowledge that it's their world and talk to their issues, because they are not about to sit still and be gainsaid by somebody who can't reasonably expect to be on this planet, for the 15 after they get 15 years older. If you want to be that older candidate, you'd better be speaking to their issues.
You know, I've heard some studies about the millennial generation. I understand they're much more, much more volunteer oriented, much more of a we kind of generation, more interested in getting along instead of fighting with others. And, sort of like maybe the 60s generation, at least we thought they used to be, you know, before they, you know, became older and supposedly more conservative and sold out, you know.
Now, wait. I never sold out.
Nobody said all of them, Sparky.
Hey, can I tell you an interesting fact that I heard on Lawrence O'Donnell's show the other night?
Sure.
No matter whether she was running for senator or her last president, Hillary's poll numbers, wherever they've started out, they've never raised or gone up. They've always gone down.
Yeah.
In every election.
Well, you know, Sparky, that's not that surprising because oftentimes a candidate, before they declare, that's the most popular they're ever going to be before they get vetted and, you know, their record picked apart and, you know, they say stupid things or do stupid things.
Yeah, I agree, Rick, but she's also got... And for a very good reason, you know, and I want to be fair about this. The Republicans have spent the last 25 years building a machine whose only purpose is the destruction of Hillary Clinton. And to that degree, she has my pity and my sympathy. But they've become very, very good at it. And as such, you know, coming to this end of this election, based on the unfavorable numbers that I've seen from polling, she's got to have every blessed vote she can get among the people who don't hold her in low esteem based on those unfavorability numbers. And that's one problem that just plagues her, and it has plagued her for her entire career. And it's a simple word, likability.
Yeah.
She's not very likable. And I know that's shallow. And I never, you know, I found it deeply insulting that we judged George Bush on whether or not Joe Sixpack would like to have a beer with him. But sooner or later, it does play in. And it's not sexist, and it's not ageist.
It's realist.
Millions and millions of people couldn't stand her in 1992 when she sat down on 60 Minutes and basically sleazed and slimed the women who were coming forward and saying that Bill was a horn dog.
Uh-huh.
And that was the moment that a lot of people just went, "Oh, really, sister? You're going to call those women names when your husband is the one who was doing it?" And remember, it was that interview that pretty much, if I recall the chronology correctly, it was that conversation that turned New Hampshire and turned Clinton, who got a second place finish, into the comeback kid.
Yeah.
But she's got likability issues. One last thing before we go, and it's something that Tracy brought up last night on Twitter. Sweet Jesus, Hillary cares about the coal miners, the poor, poor coal miners, poor old coal miners. And that was another one of those, you know, that was another one of those little boxes I checked the same way that I checked the box on Mandela.
The black people.
because it was just so disingenuous, so ungenuine. Because the fact of the matter is, if she gave a tinker's damn about Appalachia, it wouldn't just be the miners she's talking about. She's got this vaunted intelligence. She's brilliant. And yet she doesn't know about more than two dozen peer-reviewed studies that show that those poor, poor miners she's talking about have spent their careers poisoning their neighbors.
Uh-huh.
At least the ones who work on mountaintop removal sites. have spent their careers getting paid to dump airborne poison on their innocent neighbors who weren't getting paid, who weren't getting anything except poisoned. But it's the miners she's worried about. Well, you know what? All these out-of-work miners, you know how many there were to begin with? Less than 15,000 in West Virginia.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's not to say I don't have sympathy. I do. This place is about to fall apart in a big way. West Virginia and Central Appalachia needs a Marshall Plan. We ain't gonna get it.
Well, we have room for you out here in California, Bob.
But the miners are not the only ones we have to care about. I mean, we spend close to $1 billion. I think, if I recall the numbers right, the federal government spends close to $1 billion a year in terms of Medicare and Medicaid and maybe VA paying for cancer in this state.
Absurd.
And that's not all just the poor, poor miners, for whom I say again, I do have sympathy. But by God, if sympathy's all we got, then we'd better have a whole lot of it to go all the way around. And so with that little bit of a filibobster, I apologize, but we got to get out of here. Let's see. Sparky, the group will fire up again at 11:06.
Yeah, thereabouts.
Yeah, p.m. Eastern Standard Time, when Malloy is finished.
8:06 here.
Yeah, right. Yeah, 8:06 Pacific. We will close the program. $340 in the hole when we start the program on Moran Monday. We will be $540 in the hole.
Oh, $25 challenge for me as well, Bob.
Well, thank you. So that's Tracy meeting Steve's challenge and taking the challenge further. And right, thank you. Thank you very kindly, Tracy. So that would that would take us down to 290, and then 265 if someone answers Tracy's challenge. But hopefully something will happen good over the weekend, because we don't need to be crawling into holes like that in the middle of the month. But thank you, everybody. This has been a wonderful. We've just had a string of awesome. Awesome Fridays on the Front Porch, and this was another one. So thank you, Rick. Hey, Jenny, at least say hello. Jenny.
Hello.
I'm sorry. Hey, I'm sorry you didn't get into the conversation, dear.
So hello.
Try again next week.
She was just listening.
Try again next week, maybe, I hope.
Yep.
Okay, so thank you, Jenny, for joining in. Thank you, Rick. Andrew, it was an absolute pleasure having you in here for your first Friday on the Front Porch. We appreciate it.
It's great. I'm so glad after so many years I can actually talk to everyone here. And because of the time difference, probably only Fridays I'll be able to do this. So definitely I'll be back next Friday.
Oh, I sure hope so. We all enjoyed it. Thank you, Tracy, for taking us with you down the 5, across the 12, over the 15, past the 60, and through the 6 and 7 8s. And Larry, thank you for being here and chiming in and asking questions. It's always a pleasure. One and all, thank you very kindly. And thank you, everyone, who shares your precious finite time engaging in this more than 10-year-old conversation. It is quite a community that you've built here. It is indeed. Thank you very, very much to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to Sparky for his longtime moderation of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Congrats on the new band. Can't wait to hear it. Thanks to Ben Birch. Thank you, one and all. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all, and have a great weekend.